Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
I'm not interested in having Republicans pick leaders of Democratic left, right? Because if it was up to the Republicans, we never would have had Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi is clearly one of the best politicians that the Democrats or any party has had in Congress, probably since like Tip O'Neill and before Tip O'Neill, one of those guys who's got a building named after him on Capitol
Hill. I don't know, Jamal, you're sounding very corporatist here. Very establishment corporatist.
Well, you know, in San Francisco, Pelosi is viewed as a corporate Democrat. But for the rest of us in America, Nancy Pelosi is one of these people who helped us get things like health care passed, which we wouldn't have done without her, because she understands something I think very, very real, which is that you got to be pragmatic. You can come from the left. You could be progressive. You can be an outsider. But you also got to build a coalition. And that coalition has to include people who may not agree with you. And Nancy Pelosi really understood this, because when she was running and people were running, she said, fine, run against me, just vote in caucus and vote in committee and keep Democrats in charge.
Welcome back, everyone, to Trailblaze, the podcast where we talk about the America that we are becoming, the policy, the people, all of the things. I'm Nayara Hawk, joined by my dear friend,
Jamal Simmons. Good to be here. How are you doing, Nayara?
Good, good. We had a couple of things we wanted to chop it up about today. First and foremost, that Senator Mitch McConnell, who is still the Republican leader of the Senate, not in charge of the Senate, and how he decided to take a massive swipe at Donald Trump's foreign policy agenda, this big piece in Foreign Affairs, which is a something that the policymakers read, and it's a big think pieces. And he wrote in there about America's retreat, this idea that by pulling back from global engagement, we are leaving a vacuum for our enemies to fill, something that I happen to agree with. But he also, this is an interesting part, Jamal, he said, left-wing faith in hollow institutions and hollow internationalism, like that's gone, and right-wing flirtation with isolation and decline. That's a very interesting way of describing the ways people engage and ideas of the world, but he's positioning himself and his ideas as being a centrist, as if, you know, you can't count on the UN to do anything, but then the United States also can't run away.
No, Mitch McConnell is an odd character, right? Let's just go ahead and start from the beginning. Like, Mitch McConnell is not somebody that either one of us, I think, would imagine that we would spend too much time talking about, except for all the things that he's doing wrong, except for the way he stole the Supreme Court from Barack Obama, the Supreme Court seat. And then he gave one to Donald Trump, completely flipping his logic for why he deprived Barack Obama from being able to get his done the last year of his presidency before election. So, you know, he's not he's not a straight actor when it comes to politics. But we're in this particularly weird moment in American political life when faced with Donald Trump, that we are faced with these odd allies, or these, I wouldn't call him an ally, we're faced with these people who we find ourselves on the same side of an issue with, or at least talking to, who previously we never would have, just because some people are sane and some people are RFK Jr. with brainwashed.
This is about, right, the idea of getting back to first principles. And that's in these big moments of disruption. It's like, what is this all about, right? Foreign policy is ultimately about keeping Americans safe and doing things with other countries that are good for Americans. That's the theory of the case. And you can have different ways of doing that. Mitch McConnell was one of those people who made sure, and Trump won, that Ukraine got the money it was promised. Like, literally, it had been promised, signed and sealed, and Trump withheld it. That kind of led to this whole impeachment one thing that happened. In the same piece, Mitch McConnell talks about how Donald Trump has courted Putin. He's, you know, withheld all this assistance. That's also a direct swipe at J.D. Vance, who has been very anti-Ukraine this whole time. Kind of wish, though, that Mitch McConnell had done this again during a political cycle where it mattered. I mean, saying these things now, after the election, after Mitch McConnell and his Republican allies have effectively gotten what they wanted, seems just a little too cute for me.
And so here's what he wrote in that piece that I thought was interesting. He said, these public episodes raised doubts about whether the United States was committed to standing up to Russian aggression, even when it actually did so. Because, like you said, he withheld $400 million in security assistance. And what's odd about this is, when faced with the point of impeaching Donald Trump for this behavior, as you were just mentioning, he voted against convicting him in the Senate. We could have washed our hands of the entire Donald Trump second term presidency if these Republicans had either voted to convict Donald Trump because of the way he meddled in the 2020 and the Ukraine business and taking stuff from them, help from them, or in the way he allowed his and encouraged people to attack the United States Capitol during the 2020 election. We could have gotten ourselves out of the entire thing, and we didn't do it. So I think I take Mitch McConnell a little bit with a grain of salt, except it does feel like at the end of his tenure in Congress, 82 years old, he's obviously been sick. He's had a couple of big episodes where he's frozen up in public and not been able to focus, that maybe he's thinking about his legacy. And part of that legacy is to return to those Reagan roots. You know, those of us who remember kind of the Ronald Reagan Republicanism, the George H.W. Bush, the first, this idea of America having allies on the global stage and being able to interact with our allies, because it's not just about keeping America safe, which is important. It's also about keeping America prosperous. And we've got to have trading partners that we can do business with. And that's not what Donald Trump is interested in.
I think you got to what I was trying to understand for myself and articulate, the idea that he's doing this as a legacy and not when he actually had power. Because this is why I realize this kind of bothers me, is Mitch McConnell is a leader in the Senate. It is not you and me writing a think piece in this saying, hey, everybody, you know, we hope people read this and understand this is a good way to think about this stuff. He actually had the power to do things about it and opted not to. And that's this whole, let me, as I exit out in my swan song in my 80s, think about my legacy. And like, your legacy was what you did in office. I will say, though, that, you know, like when you're talking about this Reagan idea, to put in context just how off that grid Trump is, you know, Reagan had not only revamped the immigration system, but his last speech in the White House was about immigration being necessary, and we need to bring people into this country for our economic and social benefit. Like, he was the highest number of refugees we have had in modern times has been from Reagan. It has steadily declined. However, Reagan also did that whole thing of, well, we want to support certain regimes, and so we're going to send in the CIA and other assets to that. That is still a sense, though, of recognizing that the rest of the world matters, that we are part of a global community. If we do not address things overseas, like in places like Syria, it will come here to the United States. We're intimately familiar with that idea from 9/11, right? Those were the American-supported Mujahideen from years ago who then gave space to al-Qaeda to launch an attack against the U.S. Those same offshoots of al-Qaeda have now become the opposition and taken over Syria. They're saying all sorts of great things, but there's a lot for the United States not only to be skeptical about, but to be engaged in. Because if you do retreat from that space, and Trump did pull out U.S. special forces from Syria, you cede the ground for enemies like Russia, even some allies like Turkey, who don't have American interests at heart. That's what I mean. Like, there are moments in time, and Trump will have many of them, where you can do something with your power. The answer is just don't worry about it. Leave it. And he even tweeted, just, you know, leave Syria alone. Let other people figure it out. Is a very bad idea. So that's part of, I think, the timing for Mitch McConnell having said this. But to switch gears to a second for something that you had mentioned, but I didn't want us to lose, RFK Jr., who has been making the rounds in the Senate, specifically after it is revealed that he hired a lawyer who has filed multiple times to take polio vaccines off the shelves, to take other vaccines that have saved American lives, to have them effectively recalled by the FDA. That person is who RFK Jr. now has put in charge of staffing America's healthcare system.
That's right. And to stay on the Mitch McConnell for a second, you know, Mitch McConnell had polio when he was a kid. I think one of the things he wrote a statement about this when he was thinking about the RFK nomination. And what he said was, from the age of two, normal life without paralysis was only possible for me, this is Mitch McConnell, because of the miraculous combination of modern medicine and a mother's love. But for millions who came after me, the real miracle was the saving power of the polio vaccine. Anyone seeking the Senate's consent to serve in the incoming administration would do well to steer clear of even the appearance of association with such efforts. So what that says to me is this. Here you have Mitch McConnell, who has been the person who has given us this Supreme Court majority that we don't like, who's been the person who's helped win the Senate back for Republicans with even more seats than I think we expected, 53 seats. And now, as these nominees are coming through, he may be one of the four senators who stands in the way of keeping some of Donald Trump's nominees from getting there. So who are those four? The kind of big four we think about: Mitch McConnell, because he's not running again, and he does have some sense of legacy, perhaps. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, who is actual independent, but she caucuses with the Republicans. She doesn't seem to be impressed by any of these guys. There's Susan Collins from Maine, who has won when Democrats have been on the ballot. She's won when Republicans have been presidential candidates on the ballot. She seems to be impervious, it feels like, to national political wins, because people in Maine seem to know her pretty well. So she's the third one. And then the fourth one could be a variety of people. I mean, maybe Joni Ernst does finally get her back up, and she does like come out against Hegseth because of his sexual assault allegations, because he doesn't think women ought to be in the military, because those things are so important to her. And there are a couple of others who are out there who are hovering around. But the big three, I think McConnell, Collins, and Murkowski, are the ones that people are watching to see what they do. And if there's one more, then maybe some of Donald Trump's nominees, like RFK Jr., who doesn't like the polio vaccine, maybe they don't get through.
Oh, well, that's some of what we're seeing happen now, right? Mitch McConnell sees the same news reports that we do, puts out the statement like, hi, I had polio. Let's remember what this means and what you're talking about here. And then suddenly you have Donald Trump saying, oh, no, we would, you know, never want to take effective vaccines back. Didn't say not going to stop polio vaccine, but right there couching it in ways in which they can kind of thread the needle to make it seem like, yeah, we're all on the same page. And suddenly that RFK Jr., who's been an anti-vaxxer crusader for years, it's like, oh, well, of course, you know, that's not what we would want to do. Well, there's plenty of opportunities here where Trump and nominees from many parties tell people what they want to hear to get the job, right? Trump's Trump's latest example of multiple times, I'm going to lower grocery prices. I won because of groceries, standing in press conference with, you know, cans of groceries, all of them. I'm going to do it right away. He has not even taken office yet. And he has already backtracked saying, well, you know, that's really hard to do.
Yeah.
No, really? Yeah. You mean that's how things work. But he makes these promises. So I have zero trust that any of the Trump nominees walking into the Senate right now will hold on to what they said. And Mitch McConnell really, really should watch out for this, because he oversaw those Supreme Court nominee hearings where they said, oh, well, yes, Roe v. Wade is settled law. Oh, yes, it's settled law. Made a bunch of people feel okay, like, oh, yeah, yeah, they're not going to do the thing that they have worked their entire lives and careers to do. No, 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 they won't do that because that's what they told us in the Senate. Mitch McConnell is perfectly fine with that whole operation. So I'm like, guy, this one's a big deal here. The RFK Jr. one, is this really what you value, Mitch?
Well, and it's a symptom of a bigger problem among all these nominees, which is you don't know what they're going to do when they get in there, except the more extreme things they said, or do whatever it is Donald Trump has told them to do when they get into these offices. And so all we can do on the left right now, because we don't have enough votes alone on the Democratic caucus in order to stopping these nominees, they've got to build some sort of a coalition with the Republicans, is to hope that there are a few Republicans who might stand up and say, no, at least we've got to have qualified people who can do the job. At least we've got to have people who aren't subject to foreign interference because they have things in their backgrounds that people don't know about. They finally have relented. The Trump people have relented, and they're going to allow people to have FBI background checks, which those of us who've been through security clearances, I have, or you have, is it's not fun. You know, it's not fun. And when you go to work at the White House, you or in senior government, you've got to basically lay out your entire life to people. You've got to put out all your finances, your spouse's finances. You've got to talk about, you know, your background. You got to talk about any, you know, things that may have happened in your background in order for these things to come through. The idea that the Republicans were going to put some of these people in office, they thought they would, without going through background checks, just tells you everything you need to know about Donald Trump, which is that he doesn't really care about conflicts of interest. He doesn't care about people's character and moral fitness because, you know, he's not particularly interested in that.
Yeah, he wants what he wants, and he's going to do what he can to get it. Like, that's very clear. So why suddenly someone like Mitch McConnell, who knows how this all works, or really anybody else in the Senate, would sit there and think, oh, yeah, this is the person that's really going to be in office in any of these executive jobs, is the person who's talking to me right now. That's one. Not the person who's existed for the last 10 years. Right? I'm like, at this point, the actions should speak louder than the words. And if this is only a legacy protection thing, then yeah, Mitch McConnell can officially say he protested the idea of polio vaccines being eliminated. And I guess that's all he needs to do to feel comfortable. Because otherwise, if he truly, truly wanted to make sure this wasn't an issue and this wouldn't be a problem for Americans down the road, he would simply say, find us another nominee.
Well,
RFK Jr. ain't the only person who can be Secretary of Health and Security.
Yeah, and let's just remember how Donald Trump is playing this out. The Republicans are playing real thug life politics here, right? So Joni Ernst, as we mentioned before, she's a survivor of sexual assault. She's been in the military. She's somebody who should not vote for somebody like Hegseth, except now the Republicans are coming after her. They're threatening to primary her. They've been talking about her online. They've been really coming for her. So this Mitch McConnell, like, let's hold them accountable. The Trump position is Mitch's get stitches. So if you want to come out here, if you want to come out here and you want to try to, you know, stand up to Donald Trump, be prepared to catch a couple, you know, because that's how it is that they're rolling. And I think that's what's going to stand in the way. So we'll see. Get Mitch McConnell talking a little bit before the nominees come to the floor. Let's see how people vote. And my experience has been with these Republicans, I think all of us have watched them, when it's time for the vote, everybody knows Mitch's get stitches and they're not going to vote against Donald Trump.
Jamal, what about this idea that there are some Democrats who recognize this landscape, right? This is the dynamic that we're working in, right? If you're going to be practical, you understand that we cannot go back to a place where there's legal and ethical standards that everybody just follows by default, right? That's not there anymore. All of those unspoken guardrails have disappeared.
Yeah.
So now it's all out there in the open. Like everybody, Republican, Democrat, regular schmegler American, should recognize that the old rules don't apply. There are Democrats though who say, okay, we recognize the old rules don't apply. Right. This idea that a 76-year-old is with throat cancer is the best person to communicate with the American public about the issues. Like, fabulous legislator, has all the relationships, but that's assuming that what happens in Congress is the most important thing and not how people relate and connect and experience government. And I should mention Jamal, because I just saw this update that House Democrats picked Jerry Connolly. So they've made their choice. Democrats have made their choice in the House that they want to go with tried and true over the possibility of communication first. And Democrats who are in power are making some really significant choices. And some of them, I know you've heard this, we were talking about this, that some of them may go along with RFK Jr.'s appointment too.
Some of them might go along with RFK Jr.'s appointment because they think there are some things that RFK will do in office in holding companies accountable on some other food issues and some other health issues. And maybe those things could be important. I think getting rid of vaccines and standing in the way of children's health is something that's not gonna sell. But let me just finish up on the AOC mm-hmm. thing for a second. Listen, AOC has done a few things. One, she is the voice of an entire generation of Democrats who are ready for outside leadership. And if the real question here is insiders versus outsiders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is one of the outside voices that wants to reform the system and make it different. You could argue about her politics, but she's got the right stance. She's on the side of the people. Number two, she's communicating with many of the people that we need to talk to in this mm-hmm. environment. She's communicating with young people. You know, remember African-Americans who voted for Trump or who didn't vote at all, who need to be animated. I think she can talk to them. Mm-hmm. Remember the Latinos who didn't vote at all or who voted for Trump. I think she could talk to them. There are a lot of voters out there that she could talk to. And number three, she's one of the people who, even though 6 years ago she was a bomb thrower and she came in, she took out a Democratic member of Congress, mm-hmm. over the course of the last 6 years, she's become a pretty good team player for the Democrats. She campaigned for Joe Biden. You can't tell me he was her first choice for president of the United States, but she campaigned for him. She campaigned for Kamala Harris when she got to be the nominee. And she's really used her voice to argue why Democrats need to be on the side of change. So Jerry Connolly, God love him. I hope he's well. I hope he does a good job. I also hope he empowers AOC mm-hmm. to really be the voice of that committee. He's the chair, but she's the person who should be holding all the press conferences and making all the statements and doing all the mm-hmm. interviews, because that's the kind of leader I think Democrats need.
Yeah. And the truth is that AOC gets a lot of a lot of flack from hard lefties that she's sold out, but she's in Congress. You got to work the room and work Congress. So hopefully the inside outside game will actually match up. I just, you know, that this, again, there, we are at a historic distrust of government. That is part of what the Trump narrative has been. So this is by design, that they don't want people to trust government. They want them to trust Elon Musk and Peter Thiel and the American oligarchs more than they trust how people are, you know, distributing power and distributing our tax dollars. Like that's just fundamentally the game.
One of the arguments that people are using against AOC is that Republicans see her as like the boogeyman, boogeywoman. She's the person that they're going to all campaign against. Mm-hmm. If we put her in charge and any of her friends in charge, we're just going to give ammunition to the Republicans. Here's the thing. I'm not interested in having Republicans pick leaders of Democratic left, right? Because if it was up to the Republicans, we never would have had Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi is clearly one of the best politicians that the Democrats or any party has had in Congress, probably since like Tip O'Neill and mm-hmm. before Tip O'Neill, one of those guys who's got a building named after him on Capitol
Hill. I don't know, Jamal, you're sounding very corporatist here. Very establishment corporatist.
Well, you know, in San Francisco, Pelosi is viewed as a corporate Democrat. But for the rest of us in America, Nancy Pelosi is one of these people who helped us get things like healthcare mm-hmm. passed, which we wouldn't have done without her, because she understands something I think very, very real, which is that you got to be pragmatic. You can come from the left. You could be progressive. You can be an outsider. But you also got to build a coalition. And that coalition has to include people who may not agree with you. And Nancy Pelosi really understood this, because when she was running and people were running, she said, fine, run against me. just vote in caucus and vote in committee and keep Democrats in charge.
Yeah, she was totally understood the idea of how she became nationalized as the other, you know, the original woman in power boogeyman for the right wing. But she would tell candidates, including some that I worked with, that don't fall into the trap. Just ignore it. And all that matters is you getting here, representing your people, because we're going to do big things for the American public, right? We're going to protect Social Security, all of this stuff. So they have thick skin in a way that, frankly, I have not seen people like J.D. Vance navigate. So we'll see. I just, that inside-outside game, it matters. You have to do both. Pelosi knows how to work that caucus. I love that she's the only one of all of these old heads who stepped aside and said, hey, I'm just going to serve as a regular member of Congress. I'm stepping out of leadership because it needs to go to a younger generation. McConnell didn't do that. Biden didn't do that, right, until he was forced to. Like, it's just this understanding of how you build multi-generational coalitions. And she has not been dogging AOC the way you think. And actually, I think that's part of it, is this idea of how do you invest and grow a new generation in politics where not only do they have support in their communities and they can engage those communities, but they can be effective when they get to Congress. One challenge, though, is that Congress is kind of broken these days.
Yeah.
Right? The idea that there are Democrats hanging their hat on the fact that RFK Jr. has met with some big pharma healthcare company CEOs, and maybe now RFK will become the guy who will, you know, help reform and fix. He'll stick it to these healthcare CEOs. I'm like, where are you guys coming up with these ideas from? Like, how is any of this rooted in reality other than you who are in power as Democrats not really wanting to fight, but wanting to figure out how you can make this easier to deal with?
Well, you know, and to button it up, I think what we are seeing now, as we talk about Pelosi, and we've been talking about Mitch McConnell throughout the episode today, both of them who were older, I will correct one thing. Mitch McConnell did finally step down after he had all these health challenges, and he allowed a new leadership for next year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he just fell down 2 weeks ago and was in the hospital. We know Pelosi had an accident when she was traveling, and she was in Luxembourg, I think, and then just got a new hip replacement when she mm-hmm. was in Europe at a military base. So these older leaders, it is time. Look, God love them all. You know, Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, you guys did your job. Thank you. God bless. Go with God. It's time for this new generation. And I love these new voices, I think, that are starting to step up. And I think we're going to, I have this belief, if we're not uncomfortable, then we're not doing it right. Because this is a time where people out in the country are uncomfortable. They want real change. And for those of us who live and work in this rarefied air that you talked about when we were off camera, but for those of us who live and work in this rarefied air, if we're not uncomfortable, it means that we're not doing it right. Somebody
yes.
has to be making the power centers uncomfortable in order to speak up for the people.
I love it. There's a lot of people who are going to be uncomfortable. And a lot of people are going to be hurt. And the idea is, let's not let the oligarchs get that comfortable.
No.
That's a message and an idea that pretty much everybody else in America can get around. The oligarchs don't need to be comfortable right now.
Well, in our party, I would say in the Democratic Party, some people are taking care of the oligarchs because sometimes they're too much in bed with the corporates. But on the other hand, sometimes the party that the people to be against are like the old bulls, are the people who, the consultant class who has been running the Democratic mm-hmm. Party. It's some of these old members who've been around for too long, who don't really understand you got to do things differently. Frankly, some of the people who maybe have worked in the White House mm-hmm. too long, who see the world from the top and don't really see how we've got to change it. People want reform. People want change. And either they're going to have change by Donald Trump standards, or they're going to have change with values that you and I agree with more. But there's going to be change one way or the other.
One thing in life that's constant, change. Thanks, Jamal. It's good chatting with you, bud.
Good talking to you, too.